Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. Welcome back, besties.
Hi, besties.
Did you guys miss us?
I know you did.
I know it's been like 2 weeks since our last episode. Crazy. But here we are back again. And today we have an incredible guest, Jason Davis.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We're excited to talk to Jason today because as Libby was talking about before we started recording, she's doing her How I Met Your Mother rewatch. And every single time they talk about Ted Mosby being an architect, we're both kind of like, what does that mean? Like, what does he actually do? And so we're excited to actually be talking to someone in the architecture industry and figuring out, you know, what happens behind the curtain.
Yeah.
As one does.
Very exciting. So thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome.
So if you want to kind of kick it off, tell us a little bit of your background. Are you a Toledo native?
Hey, I am not a Toledo native.
Me either.
So I was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Okay. Eventually,
when I was about 8 years old, we moved to the very tiny town of Bellevue, Ohio.
Okay, yes.
Which is, I believe, right down the road from where you're from,
yes,
right?
Yes, Sandusky. We've talked about this. Yeah. It's a very small world.
Yeah, crazy. So I came from a small town. I've always known that I want to eventually end up in a city. I wanted out of the small town life. So here I am in Toledo.
Love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Love that. So talk to us a little bit about how you initially got into architecture and, you know, like where you went to school and okay. What informed that decision for mm-hmm. you.
So actually, I've known that I wanted to be in the architecture industries from a very early age. I was in middle school. We had an architect come to our school and talk about what he does. And while I don't remember exactly what he said, I just remember being obsessed with the idea of building and designing and creating. And I was always the artistic kid. I mean, I was in all of the art classes. That was my world. From middle school, I've known that I wanted to be in that field.
Yeah.
So when I graduated high school, I saw that Bowling Green State University had an architecture program. It was relatively close to home, about mm-hmm. an hour away, and I didn't want to stray too far from home. I was a little nervous about going to college, so I said, hey, I'm going to give Bowling Green a shot, and I just fell in love with the school. I absolutely loved Bowling Green State University. They had a great program. Being an architecture student was definitely difficult but rewarding. And
yeah,
for sure.
So tell us too, like, about that experience going to school for architecture. Mm-hmm. One of my really good friends studied architecture and is currently in a grad
really?
Program for it, and she tells me
wow.
about all the crazy projects that they
oh,
have to do.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
so I need to hear a little bit of that background.
Yes. So no sleep. Absolutely. You do not sleep while you're in an architecture student. I think that my personal record is about 3 days with no sleep. I think it was...
Oh, my God.
I went 72 hours on 1 hour of sleep.
Oh, no.
What was your hack for staying awake?
Constant supply of coffee.
Yes.
And I just think the adrenaline of being in the studio, mm-hmm. there was something so like chaotic but exciting about being in the studio and just getting to design and work with. And the people around you, of course, kept you awake too because everybody was there.
Yeah.
So it was just a great time. And somehow just we were able to stay awake. I could never do it now. I'm way too old for that now. But like it was... Very, very fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like it really fosters that sense of community. Like I've always seen from that type of degree that there's mm-hmm. such a sense of community there and collaboration with all of your ideas and working together on group projects and stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah, so we each had our individual projects. There were a couple group projects, but for the most part, we worked individually. But yeah, it was definitely, there was a major sense of community, a lot of great friends I made in that program, and I got to learn a lot. So
Yeah.
I love that.
Go Falcons.
Oh, yeah. Definitely go Falcons.
Did you have, like, a particular project that you remember being, like, really challenging or really rewarding from the school?
Yes. So we did so many different types of projects. I mean, I have designed nursing homes. I've designed buildings for college campuses. I've designed local projects, both in Bowling Green and Toledo, where we would have professionals from, we had the mayor of Bowling Green at one point come in and review our projects with us for
That's
a
really cool.
street in Bowling Green. One of my favorite projects, we designed for a futuristic city plan.
Ooh.
So the year was set in 2050, and we were supposed to design an entire city based off of what we believed the building environment would be in that year. So we got to bring it way into the future.
Oh my god, how do you just come up with that?
Yeah.
It was so fun. It was very, very fun.
Plotting for, like, flying cars or, like...
Yes, actually, my design in particular were, like, these mega structures. So I imagine the city to have basically smaller sub-cities within singular buildings that were just communities within themselves in a larger area. So that was my main focus for the project.
So Toledoans basically listen, Jason's going to redesign the whole city. Yeah. He's got you.
It was very unrealistic.
2050, look out.
Yeah. So I think with any career or kind of pathway, there's probably a lot of different misconceptions, and I'm assuming it's the same for architecture.
Yes.
What's something that you think people don't know about architecture?
Being an architect, while I'm not one necessarily, we tend to think that architects control every aspect of a project. What they put on paper will be built as the final project. That's not necessarily true. We have many, many hurdles that you need to jump through before you can see that completed project. I mean, there's finances. Ultimately, it's up to the customer and what they want, or the client,
right?
What they want, what they are looking for in a project. Unless you're one of those, like, massively famous, you know, we call them starchitects.
Cute.
Yeah, well, there's a name for them. You're not necessarily always going to see your design fully realized, but it is fun to kind of explore your creativity as much as you can, and to see, you know, what you have to design
without
those limitations.
And so for you personally, are there any specific structures or building styles that really resonate with you?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of mid-century modern, neoclassicalism. I love blending styles together to create something new, something that isn't expected. I mean, we have so many trends in architecture, just like we do in fashion. There are new types of architecture that emerge constantly. But I think that when an architect blends features from different trends, I think that we really create something very uniquely interesting. And I think that, yeah, my style is a blend different types.
Is that difficult to discern then, like, what would maybe just be, like, a little trend, or, like, what would kind of stand the test of time as, like, timeless?
Right. Yeah. We're always sort of arguing what is a trend and what is timeless. And there's really no way to decipher the difference between those words, because everyone has their own specific preferences. And what someone can think is just absolutely beautiful, another person can say, that's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
Sure. Fair.
So there is no right and wrong when designing in architecture. You're always going to have your supporters and your opponents, and that's just the name of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Art, I mean, art in general is very
subjective.
Yeah, it definitely.
Yeah, so then to kind of bring it back locally, are there any structures that you're kind of like, oh, I wish I could have worked on that? Or
absolutely. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Glass City Riverwalk project.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Glass City Metro Parks was just one of the phases of many that are being accomplished in Toledo. And it's just such a great project. I've followed it closely for a while. I believe it's the master plan came out in 2017.
It's really beautiful.
It is. And I just think it's a fantastic way to bring people into downtown.
Yeah.
I mean, they're always looking for ways to bring people down there and to revitalize the downtown area. And I think that's just a fantastic way to really beautify the environment down there. And
definitely. Yeah, even just like stepping out of like the immediate downtown area and then going over there, it feels so different, so close. Yes. And you really do feel connected to nature and the water and everything.
I would have loved to design that master plan, but I mean, 2017 was a while ago. I was still a baby, so there's no way they're putting me on that project. So.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical project. If you had to think up your dream house, how would you construct it for yourself?
Like I said, I do love mid-century modern vibes. That's always been a favorite of mine. I've been really into the futurism. So I would really love to find a way to blend. Mid-century modern came out in just about the 50s, the 1950s. Mm-hmm. So I think finding a way to blend a futuristic style with a style that is over 75 years old is a really fun concept to think about. I do have, you know, a whole list of specifics that I don't necessarily want to go into about my future home, but I definitely have a plan in mind.
I love that. I know. We're going to be stalking you trying to figure out where your home is,
You can come over. I'll invite you. Perfect.
And so I have to ask, because you know I'm a yapper, if buildings could talk, which building would have the juiciest gossip?
Oh, wow. Oh, so now are we talking about like national secrets, like government secrets, or are we talking about like who is hanging out with who?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I have two buildings in mind.
Okay, yeah, tell us.
Okay, so if we're thinking about national secrets, we want like the juicy gossip on the government.
Right.
Definitely the Pentagon.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely a place where plenty of gossip is.
If those walls could talk, man.
I would say, I mean, if we're thinking about like
who's like the Regina George of the buildings, gossiping about everybody.
Oh, maybe the Eiffel Tower.
I mean, wait, that's a great
Paris,
one.
Paris is the city of love. I mean,
Paris has seen a lot.
Paris has been, the Eiffel Tower, she's been around. Yeah. So,
no, for sure.
Definitely. So, kind of in that same kind of light, do you have any pet peeves with architecture where you see it and you're like, absolutely not?
Yes. One of my pet peeves is actually parking lots.
Ooh,
that's a good one.
Paved paradise, baby.
I hate driving in general, but when I'm driving through a really poorly designed parking lot, it's so stressful and frustrating. I studied how to design parking lots in college. That, so I've designed a few parking lots. When we were designing our buildings in college, we design every aspect of the building itself, and we design right up to the property line that we're given. So parking lots are necessary, and we focused a lot on sort of placing the parking lots in areas that aren't sort of conflicting with any viewpoints or any points of interest that you might have with the building. I can give an example. We actually did a whole project on a building in Bowling Green. Are you familiar with any buildings in Bowling Green? Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the Wolf Center?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the Wolf Center is an absolutely gorgeous building, but the parking lot placement is absolutely horrible.
Fair.
So you have this building, and I'll kind of describe it. It's sort of projecting out of the ground. It starts at a small point in the ground, and it projects outwards into this large rectangular space with these beautiful glass windows that stretch across the entire building.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really excited to go and climb the stairs up to these glass windows, but then you get there and you look out these windows and what you see is an ugly parking lot.
Wah, wah.
And
BG, for legal purposes, this is a joke.
You can delete that if you need to.
No, it is a really cool building. Like, honestly, it really stands out against the rest of the campus.
But that's, like, something that not a lot of people think about, you know? Like, when you're building a structure, you also have to think about how people are going to get there if you're wanting them to patron your place. And so, obviously, a parking lot is something that you don't really think about as a consumer, but as an architect, it's important.
And in terms of city planning, we want green spaces in our cities.
Right.
We want buildings and residences and shops. But then you need to also think about how are these people getting there?
Yeah.
Right. So it's a very difficult topic to plan for. And many people go up. We, you know, build parking garages, which are effective in reducing the amount of ground parking.
Right.
And we're actually doing a great job in many cities and building up, like I said, and sort of renovating these parking spaces into green areas where people can gather. And that's a great way to revitalize a city that's just full of these big, ugly, empty parking lots. So.
I think Jason doesn't really like parking lots.
I don't. I hate driving.
Yeah, so fair. So fair.
We need a functional parking lot.
Like, yeah, real.
That's what we need.
But yeah, so obviously, once you graduated from school and entered into the workforce, we want to kind of catch up with where you're at now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell us about your role.
So I currently work at a place called Cutting Edge Countertops.
Slay.
I work with AutoCAD, which is a design program specifically used to program the saws, which cut the granite and the stone and the marble. And essentially what I do is we send someone out to, let's say you want to measure your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
We send a measure technician out to measure your kitchen. That is, we use they use lasers to capture all of the dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Those dimensions are sent to me. I create a drawing that the customer will view and approve. And I'm also sort of the problem solver, the technical aspect of that project all falls on me to sort of decide how this is being done and also how the saws are going to cut your countertops.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I love that. So are you passionate about your own countertops as well? Or is
No. Unfortunately, I rent, so I have no choice in the matter.
So fair. So fair.
But I would love new countertops if my landlord is listening.
Yeah. You're like, hey, hit me up at Cutting Edge anyway.
Yeah.
But
that's probably a lot of like problem solving, critical thinking, quick on your feet.
We are the critical thinkers of the company. We have to know basically everything there is to know without bragging too much about the production of these countertops. And if there is an issue, we are expected to correct it, to figure out how we need to go about correcting it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very technical, very detail oriented, which I love. I love looking at all the details.
I love that. Well, and we kind of wanted to talk to you about a little bit of a larger conversation in terms of architecture. So, you know, from your perspective, obviously, we talk a lot about sustainability and how we can help to make our planet a lot more sustainable and, you know, elongate all of our time here.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to talk about how that plays into the architecture industry and what sustainable architecture looks like.
Essentially, when an architect wants to construct a building sustainably, we want to start from the very beginning of construction.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on everything from carbon emissions from the vehicles that deliver the materials to the project site.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on the materials themselves, where they are coming from, what they are made out of.
Yeah.
We focus on heating and cooling in a sustainable manner because that requires gas, it requires electricity. Mm-hmm. We focus on how to generate power for the structures. So you have solar, you have wind. Mm-hmm. So every aspect of a building can be made sustainably. But right now in today's day and age, it is not the norm. Mm. It is, I would love to see sustainable architecture become the norm, to become affordable for the everyday person.
Yeah.
And not just these mega, you know, these larger buildings that can afford to be sustainable.
Right.
I would love to see the price of solar panels driven down mm-hmm. and wind turbines driven down so we can see neighborhoods full of solar panels.
Yeah.
And these other technologies, you know, water collection, they can be, they are getting more affordable.
Mm-hmm.
I will say we're heading in a good direction, but it's still a sort of niche market when designing sustainably. And even larger structures, I mean, we're seeing a swing towards timber building. Mm-hmm. Skyscrapers are being made out of timber, wood, instead of metals,
right?
Which is, you know, great to see even large structures becoming more sustainable. Yeah,
for sure. I love that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's great as we're kind of transitioning into more sustainable practices. And also kind of as we're talking about transitioning in the architectural field, I kind of wanted to get your opinion on, you know, increasing technology like AI and these kind of things. Another big question to kind of throw your way.
It's a very interesting question and a good question, too.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's on everybody's minds now.
Of course. Right. How's that affecting your day-to-day or what the future will look like with architecture?
It's interesting because to be honest, I don't truly know how far AI will go. Right now, I think it's just a tool to sort of play with,
mm-hmm.
but I think it has the potential to become much, much more
right.
in our field. I mean, we are already designing interiors. You could take a picture of your living room and have AI transform it into something completely different based off of keywords that you type in.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing technology. I can't deny that.
Right.
It's interesting to see how realistic or how technical AI can get in the building process.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we see an image, but does AI necessarily understand physics?
Right.
Do they understand how that structure is going to be supported? Do they understand where beams need to be placed to support the roof?
Yeah.
There's a lot of technical details that still need to be handled by people that AI, I don't think necessarily has the capabilities to do quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
It's interesting, though. I mean, I've seen renderings of buildings that are just amazing.
Yeah.
That have been created with AI. And I remember back in school, we had to do all of that by hand. I mean, we were placing every tree, every person, every cloud, all by hand. And now you can place your design and just have AI create the environment around it.
Yeah.
And I've been out of school for a hot minute. We did not have AI
Fair.
Back in the day. So I'm not necessarily sure how the kids now are using AI in college.
Yeah, that's sure. interesting because they might not be allowed to.
Yeah.
Right. Many people probably aren't too happy with the emergence of AI in the field.
Sure, for sure. And I mean, I would imagine for someone like you whose job is to kind of intercept and deal with all the technical errors, that's probably scary.
Yes.
To just have that handed to you, but it's like, are these details here? Like,
mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, hopefully there's still like a system where we can check that
mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, everything about the building has to be designed perfectly. Yeah. Or you can, you know, have a building tumble down.
So right. No room for error.
Can can AI necessarily make those calculations? Not right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see.
It's possible.
We'll see.
Yeah.
It's an interesting conversation.
For sure.
It is. Yeah.
And, you know, I want to kind of come back to a lighter note, which is I feel like all people in general, but specifically for Gen Zers who might not have, like, the home of their dreams yet or renting, living in an apartment, whatever, are trying to figure out ways to kind of hack their home environment to make it a lot more fun or cute or enjoyable, you know? And so I'm curious from your perspective how Gen Zers can kind of like hack their living space to make it feel more comfortable.
I would say the most important thing is that we don't rush into any design decisions. Mm-hmm. I think the best designs are the ones that take time.
Right.
You can run to the nearest store and buy everything in the aisle because you think it fits your aesthetic. But do you truly love any of those pieces?
Mm.
And sometimes it takes time to find pieces that you love.
Yeah.
Personally, it's taken years to design my house because I pick out pieces that I actually love and enjoy to see.
Right.
And while trends can be a good direction to look at a trend and say, I want my house to look like that.
For sure.
It's the question of whether or not you truly love each and every piece. And you can mix trends together. Like I said, with my favorite styles of architecture,
mm-hmm.
you can mix them together.
For sure.
So when designing for your house, I wouldn't worry about what somebody thinks, what other people think is beautiful or ugly. I would worry about picking pieces that you actually enjoy to look at every single day.
Yeah.
I love that.
Definitely. I love that.
Yeah.
Too.
Do you do a lot of like thrifting for pieces?
Absolutely.
Or? I love that.
There are many, many pieces that are thrifted in my house. A lot of my mid-century modern pieces are thrifted. And I think that's a fantastic way to find pieces that you love.
Right. That yeah. other people
out of
also
random
love.
Piles right. of stuff.
And I feel like they're more meaningful. Like, it's less expensive, per se, but the fact that you found it, like, you're going to hold on to it
forever. It called to you.
Yeah.
And you have very specific memories about each and every piece.
Yeah.
And I have some pieces that I like to call conversation pieces
mm-hmm.
in my house. And they're always the first thing that people walk in the door and say, oh my gosh, like, I love that. Where did you find it? And I know exactly where I found it, on
right.
what day, how much it costs.
I love it.
And like, there's so many memories that I hold with every piece in my house.
See, that's yeah, me, that's but just cool. with my Christmas tree that I refuse to take down.
It's
at
great.
All months
Living
of the year.
With her.
Uh-huh.
And
it's
that.
July, and
so
there's
festive.
A Christmas.
Yeah, it's so great. Christmas forever. Anyway.
So before we get into our Roman empires, which is everyone's favorite, kind of tell us your advice for Gen Z architects, aspiring architects.
Anything you have. Absolutely. Learn how to stay awake for long periods of time.
Love that.
That would be the best piece of advice. No. I mean, architecture school was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I loved every second of it. It was hard. There were tears. There was a lot of stress, a lot of chaos.
For sure.
But I found some of the best moments in all of that stress and chaos. And the projects that we were able to design, I still can't believe that came from my imagination. I mean, you spend so many hours upon hours designing one specific thing, and you are so proud of it at the end of the day. And it's just a great feeling to, even though you're not necessarily constructing buildings, it's all very theoretical
mm-hmm.
when you're in school.
Mm-hmm.
It really does impact you in a very special way.
I love that.
That's so special.
And we are back with everybody's favorite segment, the Roman Empires. And so I won't pick on the new kid today. So Jason, you're safe for now. But I'm going to go to Libby first. Libby, tell us yours.
I would love to go first. this is my favorite Roman Empire ever, I think. And my most true Roman Empire that I think about all the time and will think about for the rest of time. And that is when Lady Gaga brought up Orange Shirt Kid. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. And if you don't, go find out. But every single time this video comes up on my For You page, I watch it through. Sometimes I cry. I've seen it a million times. Why am I still crying? But I love it so much. I'll do a brief explanation. Basically, she's on stage. She's performing. She has a bunch of background dancers. And then she sees this kid in the crowd. He's wearing a very orange jacket. And she goes, "You, come up here." And he goes up and he does all of the choreo, like, by heart, just does it. And the background dancers, like, help guide him around the stage, like, pretty discreetly. And he kills it. And it's amazing. It's and so at the amazing. End, she goes, you can do anything. Like, if you put your mind to it, see, like, my fans are awesome. And it's such, I have chills right now just talking about it.
Me too.
I love Lady Gaga so much, and I love that video so much.
I think it. I know what you're talking about, but I do not remember the
Go
jacket.
Watch it again.
So, Jason, I'll give you a little bit more time, and I'll go. But I'm making this a fun little interactive Roman Empire.
Okay.
I can pick my fight me in the comments Roman Empire, or I can pick my I can't believe this movie traumatized me as a child Roman Empire, and you guys can choose.
I pick movie because I'm still traumatized from Fight Me in the Comments Subway Tuna.
Fight me in the comments, Subway Tuna was a lot, but I stand by it. Okay, so here's what I want to talk about today, and it's the ending of Toy Story 3. And that, and I'm not kidding you when I tell you, sometimes when I need a good cry and can't just, like, muster it up myself, I will sit down and I will turn on Toy Story 3, and then I will just get to the scene where they're all in the furnace.
That's yes. what I was going to say. Is that
yeah.
what we're talking about?
Okay,
yeah.
No, because, no, there's an ending to this, but let's start with the furnace, because I'm sorry.
It is really traumatizing.
Never, as a child...
That was the only part of Toy Story 3 that I remember.
No, right. actually, like, as a kid, my mom's explaining to me, like, well... You know, like, they feel like they have no other way out, and so they're just trying to, like, enjoy the last moments together, and I'm just weeping.
Beautiful.
I'm like, but they can't die. I love them. And I was just so sad. I'll tell you what, those little alien guys, Ex Machina, I love them so bad. They're my favorite characters. But here's what I want to say, though. You go through all of that with the furnace. You go through all of that with the furnace. And then they make it out, and you're like, oh, I'm done crying. And then you get to the end, and Andy just, like, leaves
yes.
for college or whatever because he's lame, even though that's great.
Go to college. Like,
I know. But, you know, I was mad at him at the time because don't leave your toys. And then he leaves all the toys, and they're all sad. And I know they go to a good home, and it ends up being fine. But it really made me upset. I was like,
I know you're crying right now, I think.
I see a tear.
I'm like, you guys don't even understand how much those toys loved Andy. And then Andy just left.
What a horrible person.
I know. Like, why'd you have to go to college? Like, don't do that. Just stay home with your toys.
Stay home forever.
No, for real. Anyway, so Toy Story 3 was traumatizing. All right, Jason, you're up.
Let's
hear it.
Okay. So there was a podcast. And do you know who T.S. Madison is?
I do not.
Yeah, no.
You're going to have to give us the full Reader's Digest.
So basically, if you ever want to look it up, just type in not the boar worms into TikTok.
Oh, I've seen
have
that.
Have you heard that sound?
Yes.
Not the boar
not
worms.
Not the boar worms.
This is sounding familiar.
I cannot stop saying not the boar worms. Either out loud or in my head, just on repeat.
You need to give, like, the, for all of our non-Gen Z friends listening to this, the explanation of what that terminology means.
Okay.
Our executive producer is really excited to know what this means.
T.S. Madison was on a podcast with Katya Zomolochikova.
Truth.
If you know who that is.
I love Katya.
I love Katya. And T.S. Madison was explaining a scene in a movie that she was describing to Katya in a very sexual manner.
Mm-hmm.
Am I allowed to say that?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. She was saying that the scene was not necessarily supposed to be sexual, but she really thought of it as a sexual matter, and it was supposed to be a very, like, intense, very scary scene. Mm-hmm. And so she just keeps saying, not the boar worms. Very, very sexually and increasingly sexually throughout the entire podcast.
The only thing on the hear me out cake.
Literally.
Yes. So it became a very widely used sound on TikTok, which did not help me at all forget that happening.
No, so far.
I actually listened to the podcast when it first came out, and I said, this is gold. This is TikTok gold. This is going to be famous. And surely it was.
Yeah. So true.
So that is all I can think about now.
Not the boar worms.
Yeah. Not the boar worms.
The title of this episode.
No, literally, not the boar worms with Jason Davis. Well, you know what? A fitting send-off. Not the boar worms.
Not the boar worms.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
We want to thank Jason Davis, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is the incomparable Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcast.
Bye, besties!
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.